Hi there. This is Will Arnett, host of the Will Arnett Fun Zone podcast.
Hang on, Will.
This week, what?
We've talked about this, man. We've been over this like so many times.
Okay. But we are doing it though, right? We are going to do that.
No, eventually? We're not. This is Smartless.
Okay.
Fun Zone.
I know.
Well, what are we doing today?
All we need is a super simple welcome to Smartless.
Oh, right. I gotta dig deep for this. Welcome to Smartless. Now, listen, Jason, before we get too deep into the show, we need to talk about the crew caller. And now you've walk us through what happened this morning.
Well, I went ahead and I got showered and changed prior to our record for my golf engagement following this record.
Oh, you golf?
Yeah. Yeah, not proud to say, but Chuckles over there does it too. So I put on my collared shirt as you're required to do, and then it's a little chilly here in Los Angeles, so I put on a nice wrap over the top of it, a nice cashmere wrap. And the collar on that crew neck was a little tight, so it took the collar of my undershirt there and pushed it up, and then Will was hurting me, calling it a mock turtleneck. So that sweater's gone. I'm going to go to a V-neck.
And Will said we were talking about money for the producing the podcast. And Will said,
"What's the budget for mock turtlenecks for Jason for the coming out of the budget?"
And I've
Jason,
already maxed
it's a
I've
fair question. It. First of all, you're allowed to mock a mock turtleneck. It's built into the name.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, but by the way, you'll never see me in a mock turtleneck. You'll never see me in a turtleneck for sure because I've got. Probably, you know, they ask you sometimes, you know, what's the one thing you change about your body?
Yeah.
It's probably my non-superhero jawline. I've got sort of like a diagonal from the end of my chin to my Adam's apple as opposed to a 90-degree thing. So if
too.
I wear a turtleneck, I then have the turkey goblet hangover over the edge that cascades, that skin that cascades over the edge of the turtleneck. I can't have it.
Yeah, no, I get it.
I disagree. You both have nice silhouettes.
Go back to the thing, though, about being cold. It's cold in L.A. I came down the stairs today. I'm not making this up. I came downstairs, and Scotty had the heat on the first floor of Los Angeles, and the heat. And I was sweating by the time I got to the
bottom
of it.
Sean, you come down the stairs, your Hollywood house, every day like Gloria Swanson, right? Like
that's
from
right.
Hollywood
and flowing house coat.
Yeah.
Ready for my close-up.
It's so great to see you guys.
It's so great to see you guys, too. This is really exciting. I'm excited for you guys to talk to our guest today.
Oh, I am excited to listen.
Because our guest is somebody, this is a mega talent. This person is a person who's been doing it for a long time. This person is not just an actor. This person is a writer. This person is a skilled musician who started playing violin at the age of 3.
What?
They can play the piano, accordion, trombone, guitar, harmonica, and has written and improvised music a lot in a show that they've done now for many, many years. This person received an honorary doctorate from performing arts from Merrimack College. This person, was active at Williamstown Theater Festival back in the day. This person has gone on to a huge career in television, in I guess the longest running TV comedy of all time. This person
has slow down here. I want to do some guesses here.
Well, this is my guess, and it makes sense because this is my friend, and I'm so happy to have my friend. And I want you guys to start trying to guess. This person has done lots of movies. This person was in the Lego movie with me.
This is Charlie
longest
Day.
Longest running comedy.
The Lego Movie 2.
Yeah.
Pacific Rim.
Longest running comedy.
Horrible Bosses and its sequel.
Well, it's got to be
Beth
Chuck
Known
Day.
For his
yeah, it's Chuck Day.
Thank God.
All right. You're scraping the bottom of the barrel now, boys.
No, I was.
Time to wrap the show up.
Chuck, what about this? Now, I think the reason you've taken so long to book on this is. your schedule.
It took a long time for someone to ask me. I can't believe
Rob McElhaney beat you onto this show.
Oh, that's
what does that say about us?
Here's my favorite part, is that Bateman and Chuck Day have been friends for many years. They've done a few movies together, and I was so happy to steal Charlie as my guest from under Bateman just to really put
it. I would have had him on, too.
I know.
I think maybe you did ask me.
Yeah, definitely. And then you were saying, I don't know. We're starting a podcast. And I think he gave me a little bit of a runaround, and I don't like to pressure people. I know you were looking to get paid quite a bit of money for today's spot.
I was waiting for you guys to make money so I could start making money, which is cool, because Will cut me a great check for this.
I had to send him over cash, a guy with a rucksack full of cash.
Yeah, and that's a pay cut for me, guys.
Because you're not doing that well, right? You know, that show is not paying you.
I've made a lot of bad decisions, though. You know what I mean? I made a lot of sketchy calls.
Wait, we had McElhaney on, and what is it really the longest running sitcom in history?
Yeah.
Years. If you don't count episodes, I think you did more episodes of Will and Grace in like two seasons than we've done.
How many years is it now? This is something we don't want to gloss over because you should be, and I'm sure you are, so proud of how long this show has been on the air.
Yeah, it's so
this
cool.
This doesn't just make
We're talking,
itself.
Of course, about Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
It's 15 years. We just had the 15th season.
15 years.
And you're about to do another one or two?
I don't know. At least another one, and we'll see after that.
But, look at the way he's positioning right there. He knows Fox is listening.
Of course.
FX or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's going to jam him again. He's going to get it to 20.
You know what it is? We've done a lot. We've done a lot of these. I don't know how long we can keep
Nothing
them
Nothing adds more zeros than a foot out the door, right? I mean, that's true.
That's true, yeah.
So, Charlie, let's talk a little bit about, because we're talking about Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is a huge, long-running show, longest by years. Could you have imagined, take us back to the day when it actually became a TV show? Because we had Rob on here, we talked about it. You guys made some videos and stuff, and you shot some stuff. Is that, am I remembering that correctly? And you took it to FX?
Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, we were shooting in my apartment, which was on the corner of Western and Franklin there. I lived, and I think I paid $600 a month for rent.
That was, you got robbed.
Quick aside, Jason, last time you were east of Cahuenga, 5, 4, 3, 2,
back in the drug days, for
yeah,
sure.
Okay. Yeah, I think I might have seen you scoring on the corner. Yeah.
There was a payphone I'd like to hang out at.
Yeah, I might have had to run you down a dime bag or something once. I'm not sure what it was.
Oh my God! Well,
so you're in your apartment,
right? And was there a phone call from your agent or manager or something that said they bought it?
You know what it was? So we had shot this thing, and it was like pretty good, but we knew we'd sort of not hit the nail on the head, and we had nothing really going on, so we redid the whole thing. I mean, we were doing it so cheaply; we were holding the cameras, we had a little boom. It was real low rent. And our second go-around was pretty funny. We thought, there's something here. And we were all at 3 Arts Management at the time. So Nick Frankel and Michael Rotenberg took it to WME, and they kind of sat on it for a while. They're like, yeah, maybe we'll hook you up with a big producer. And, God, we waited forever for Jon Favreau to watch it. And he just, I guess he never got around to it.
That got away.
I know. Well, I mean, I'm so glad I'm not cutting half a check to John. You know, like, yeah. I mean, I'm sure he would have helped a lot, but, you know, it's nice not to have to be paying him anything. But eventually we got kind of bored and we shot a third episode. And
literally, you shot it because you were just in this waiting because the agencies are you guys are on their timetable.
Well, that and the only thing to do on Western is either move the dime bags or shoot another episode. And
it should be noted. Can I just take this? Am I right in saying this? And you guys can agree or disagree with me. The agenting in show business is hilarious because, like, you can't get in touch with your agent in the first thing in the morning because they're in a staff meeting. Uh-huh. Every agent takes lunch at 1 o'clock no matter what. So they're out of the office for 2 hours.
They need an hour or so to get
there. So they leave at 12. Sorry, we lost him. He's on his way to a lunch. And then he's back at 3. Then they do the thing is like, well, he's not in the office. Why not? Well, because next week is Thanksgiving. Yeah, next week is Thanksgiving, not this week. Yeah. The fuck are you doing?
And then the month of December.
And then month of December, sorry, it's the holidays. Sure, got it. And then they go, and then, you know, obviously Sundance is at the end of January. So nobody's back till Feb 1. It's the most ridiculous racket of all time.
We were getting a lot of that.
Yeah. The end of the day goes like this. Well, the end of the day goes, sorry, we're closed. He's going to start rolling calls. And then they call knowing you're not going to pick up.
So yeah. Or they call you at 7 o'clock and you're having dinner with the kid. And you're like, why are you calling me now?
Yeah. Right.
Sorry. Well, sorry, Charlie. I just had
no,
to
that's
there.
It, though. We lost sort of patience with that kind of thing. And we said,
I bet.
We're going to leave you guys and we're going to go to a different agency with this. And that sort of prompted them setting a bunch of meetings, and Rob went around because we thought maybe it'd be too much to have all three of us in the meeting. So Rob went, and we had an offer from FX to shoot a, you know, a real pilot with a real budget.
Rob's the closer.
He's the closer. He's better in a meeting. He's a better salesman.
How are you in meetings? Because I don't think I'm great in meetings. I don't enjoy them. I feel like I'm trapped in an office. I feel like I'm 45 minutes from getting out of these walls, so it better not go bad in the next minute or two because I'm stuck. Like all those things I start to feel, I start to think about, and then the walls start getting closer and closer like Star Wars. How are you? Do you look at it as like an arena, like I'm on stage or this is fun, like let's win? Or are you looking to get out of there? It's tough. It's a tough part of this business.
You know, it depends. They're all very different. You go into a meeting and you just, sometimes you just get cold stares. And
yeah. Well, yeah, often.
I do have that vibe sometimes of like, well, here's the idea, guys. Do you want to buy it or not? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. If you have that indifference, you know, what's it called, Will?
It's called sexy indifference.
Yeah, sexy indifference. Yeah.
Charlie, you know about his sexy indifference, right?
Yeah.
It's one of the major terms.
It's you're either selling or you're buying. The buyers usually look at you with absolutely no expression because they can. The sellers, us, have to go in there like, circus clowns because we're selling. And that's really what we do in this business. And in a good year, you're selling yourself 6, 7, 8 times and winning. Like, in other words, you get fired, you know, half a dozen times and rehired half a dozen times if you're killing it. So, I mean, how many people in other industries have to sell themselves or get fired or rehired maybe 3, 4 times over their whole life? I mean, we got to do that all the time. It's tough. It was hard.
It is
for
crazy,
me.
But then you look at the flip of it, Charlie. So you guys go through this process. You make this thing. You wait. You make this thing. You wait. You're waiting. You have to threaten to leave the agency. Finally, FX buys it. You guys are kind of a little bit hat in hand. And now all these years later, you're at the position we asked you at, like, are you going to do more? You're like, maybe I'll do one more, whatever. Yeah. Like you have the tables have turned a little bit.
Yeah. Well,
not a little bit, a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is though, when we were shooting that pilot, I was 27 years old.
Right.
And I'm 46. And so I feel like, you know, I put in my time with this one.
You look 23, though. How have you lost age since you started?
Well, yeah.
Must be a real stress-free set there.
But we all make stuff. We all produce or write or direct or act, whatever. And Charlie, kind of what Jason was talking about, is there a point where you, like, are you getting to a point where it's bothersome that the grind is getting to you about getting all these no's? Because it seems now to put together a package to sell something, you have to really stack the deck high before anybody will even consider. You hear about Meryl Streep getting passed or whoever, these big stars go out to pitch these shows and they get passed. Well, if they get passed and I'm stacking these deck and we're getting no's, what does it take to keep a production company going?
I like to get everything done independently of a partner. So, you know, I'd rather, if I'm going to be pitching a movie, I'd rather have the whole thing written.
Mm, right.
And say, you know,
and a director in place and an actor in place.
Yeah.
And like, here's,
yeah,
we're going.
This is what it is.
So all they do is write the check.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, as it should be.
Yeah. But then that means you got to do a bunch of work for free ahead of time, which is cool. If you've got the time and the funds to bank on yourself and work for free for a little while. Yeah.
Look, at some point you're going to have to do that work anyway. Yeah. So mm-hmm. It depends, right? There's other things I'll pitch and I'll know, okay, I want to get a writer on this and I want to get that person paid. So I'll pitch. But even then, I'll work with that writer. I'll develop a whole outline. So that movie is basically ready to go. And I'll attach a few people to the movie and then I'll go in and be like, here it is. This is what it is. Here's who's acting in it. Here's the director. Now, please pay this
and
guy.
And Will and Sean,
it.
You got to understand, this guy is, he's so fast and he's so good. He wrote Horrible Bosses 2 on a 5-hour plane ride from New York to Los Angeles.
That's
I'm
amazing.
Not exaggerating. He
That's
did a
crazy.
Complete rewrite, page one rewrite on it, and we used most of it. And
wow.
out of deference to our writers that wrote the draft before, I'm exaggerating a little bit, and but Charlie
That's
deserves
incredible.
A great deal of credit for that.
Well, yeah. I appreciate that. I don't want to take credit away from the guys
you don't
who
even remember
wound up
their
doing
names. What an asshole.
No, I mean,
he's just, he's fast, but he is a prick.
I'm fast with writing. I'm real slow with names.
And we will be right back.
We get support from Canva. When your work, presentations, and docs look good, you look good. And you can design stunning work presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos with Canva. Canva is an easy-to-use online design platform. It helps people design compelling visual content and is great for designing any type of presentation and great for any teammate. So our team at SmartLess is using Canva when they're coming up with different design concepts for various things with related to SmartLess and SmartLess Media, because we have a lot of stuff going on. It's a busy crew, okay? And if it wasn't for Canva, they'd all be fired. Supercharge your work with AI-powered Canva presentations, docs, videos, and more. In just a few seconds, you can generate slides and text from a prompt. AI is built into Canva right where you work, so you can stay on task without any app switching. It's AI that's easy to learn and even easier to use. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva is perfect for any work task. Sales decks, hiring docs, marketing brainstorms, employee videos, you name it. Anyone at work can design with Canva. Start designing today at canva.com. Designed for work. Thank you to Organic Valley for supporting the show. I'm just finishing up a little cottage cheese here. See, the thing is, I'm always on the hunt to find the best dairy products. But so many options out there. Which one do you choose? With Organic Valley, you can feel good choosing their dairy products. Their products are ethically sourced from small family farms where cows spend lots of time grazing outside on organic pasture. Organic Valley dairy doesn't come from those big factory farms. Their farmer families are real people who care about people, animals, and nature. It just tastes better. You can taste the organic. For me, look, I'm a coffee guy, okay? Guilty as charged. Every morning, I do the same thing, which is I come downstairs, I make my coffee, and the thing that this so important ingredient is my half and half. And I just happen to choose Organic Valley half and half even before they started supporting the show. I mean, talk about a match made in dairy heaven. And I also happen to enjoy their eggs and their butter and their other products too. So I was going to say, so sue me, but so don't sue me. When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you enjoy a great tasting organic dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals they call it home. And do not ask me to convert that to hectares. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better. Over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/smartlist to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/smartlist. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
And now back to the show.
Wait, so speaking of names, so you and obviously you have a long-time relationship with Rob McElhenney. How did you guys first meet? What was that?
I met Rob on a plane. So we were both being flown out to test for a pilot for the same role.
No
way. And it was one of those things where, you know, you're in the airport and you're like, oh, this guy's got to be an actor. You know, he's got that look. And the show is called Mather House. It's about college kids or something like that. And, you know, I think, I don't know when I said hello, but maybe after the plane landed. And
where were you coming from? From New York?
From New York, yeah. We both lived in New York and we were flying out. They, you know, they put you up on like at the Hilton or something right off the 101 there.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
By Universal.
Oh, no way. Many times.
So we're both staying there and then. Yeah. And then
used to find Jason on the sun.
Yeah.
I used to remember pilot season, I used to come out there and stay there or the Sheraton or the Intercontinental over by Fox, which is where Tony Hale and I stayed for the Arrested test. Anyway, keep going.
It was my second time that happened. It happened to me. I tested for something called Weird Henry, and they liked me for Weird Henry. And they flew me out, and then they did one sort of round of notes with the producers, and then the studio was like, this show's not going to work, and they canned the whole thing. And then the same thing happened with Rob. Rob and I both went and tested. And I remember thinking like, I got this guy. He doesn't have the charisma. I'm not worried about him.
Look at his stupid face.
Look at his dumb face, man. He's never going to make it in show business.
He'll never own a football team with Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, forget it.
He was too handsome. I was like, he's too model-y. You need someone real. And then the same thing happened. They canned the whole show while we were out there, and we just kind of bonded and stayed buddies, and you know, now I can't get rid of him. You know, every year I'm like, well, maybe we've done it with the show. He's like, come on, one more, let's go.
So, and then, so not only can you not get rid of him Always Sunny, then you guys create Mythic Quest with it wasn't just the two of you, it was somebody else too.
With Megan Gans.
Megan Gans, yes, of course.
Yeah, no, I can't get rid of this guy. I go on podcasts, I'm just talking about him. I'm like, I hear him. He barely talks about me. I'm talking about this guy constantly.
No, he talks about you quite a bit. We just can't repeat it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And you guys started a podcast together, too. Now you've got this Always Sunny podcast.
And now we're talking about the show, and people are listening.
But we're not here to plug that. We're not going to talk about
that.
No, let's plug everything you got.
I think if we really want to get this cooking, we should just talk about golf. I mean,
let's go.
First of all, when we were doing Horrible Bosses,
yep.
And I'm a bit of a golf nut, I would say, oh, Jason, you know, I heard you used to golf, and you said, yeah, I don't do it anymore. I was like, well, you should come out with me, you know, maybe sometime and just, you know, dust off the old sticks and hit a few. You are the most golfing man I know now.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah.
Right. Nonstop.
And back then, I was very disciplined. I didn't want to dance with the dragon again. You know, I've got addiction issues. And
No. You are fully addicted to golf.
Dance with the dragon.
Yeah, no, that's a saying. And then during COVID, Will just threw me a lifeline. He said, listen, buddy, you got to step away from Rachel Maddow, take your PJs off, and let's get out there, do something socially distant. Let's play golf.
And 2 weeks later, we were in Pebble Beach.
Yeah. He put it right in my arm. Yeah.
I love it. I love that you do it. I hope you don't give it up.
No, I don't. Look at me. I'm dressed. Look at my outfit, for Christ's sake. I'm a half hour from the tee.
Well, keep it snappy because I know you got a tee time.
Yeah, let's go.
Charlie, I have
Sean, I know your question is going to be, hey, Charlie, how long and straight are you off the tee? Very. He's very consistent off the tee. Thanks. It's unbelievable.
This guy's a single-digit handicap, listeners. Okay. Anybody who's into golf, this guy doesn't shoot over 80.
It's gross.
He's a natural athlete. Played a lot of baseball when he was coming up.
This is the most you know about me. This is surprising.
So Charlie, speaking of growing up, so I mentioned in the thing that you play piano and you play all these instruments. Yeah. What's up with that?
I don't know.
Look at Sean perk up. Sean doesn't want to talk about a long off the tee, but let's get that harmonica in his mouth, huh?
Let's do it. I probably have one lying around. I don't know where the violin thing came. Thank you, buddy. You have that ready to go?
Yeah, anytime there's a bad joke.
Hey, where's that keyboard we were going to introduce this
we're gonna
year, Sean?
I know. I'm too lazy to lift this up and go in there because I got to hook it all up. Do you still play violin? Do you still play these instruments?
I never played the violin. That's one of those.
So that was not true.
I think I played the violin from like 3 to 3 and 1 month. You know, where my parents were like, "Well, this
Wikipedia
is too young."
Is very accurate.
Yeah. Is there an instrument that you excel at or that you stick with?
Keep it clean.
I don't excel at any of them, but I can play a little piano and a little guitar, and
that's
great. I can write like a goofy song that we put on Sunny.
Was that something that your parents like incurred? Like, did you take piano lessons, guitar lessons?
Yes.
And all that
kind of I took piano lessons maybe till I was 10, and then I switched to the trombone. I used to have a little sweatshirt because I was in the school band that said Charlie Trombone, so that like became my nickname.
You know the problem
for
with
long.
The trombone is if you leave it in the rain, it gets rusty. You know,
it's true.
If you leave it in the rain,
clean it up.
You keep it clean. You get some kind of brass cleaner or something like that.
Charlie, when you write and produce or direct or whatever you do, do you think about music when you're doing it, or is it an afterthought?
It's a big part of how I write something. I'll be just listening to, you know, a style of music, and I'll have an
idea.
Depeche
Mode.
Yeah, I'll be listening to Depeche Mode. I'll be thinking, I got to do a movie with Bateman where he, you know, wears eyeshadow and trench coats.
You should see me. I got great goth skills.
Yeah.
I do love Depeche Mode. Wait, Charlie, I know so little about, so it says that you were born in New York, in the city.
Yeah.
True story?
True story. Because my parents both met at Columbia. Where they were both music, getting their doctorates in musicology, and then
wait a second, pump the brakes. So your parents, so you kind of brushed through the whole music thing and your own involvement with music. Your parents have degrees in music from Columbia?
Yeah,
yeah. My parents are very
smart.
Smart, as is my sister. She also has her PhD in musicology.
What?
And what happened here was that I'm an idiot, and I was like, I got to get away from this music thing. So, you know, I'm taking trombone lessons and all my buddies are outside playing baseball. And I eventually, you know, walked away from it all and gave it up. But then when I got to like maybe a senior in high school or college, I picked up the guitar and I was like, oh, this is maybe could be cool or a way to meet a girl. Mm-hmm. And then I got back into it. But I didn't want to be, they had no money. And I didn't want to be a music person.
So you became an actor.
So they're at Columbia. They're both in music programs at Columbia. They meet. You're born in the city, and then what happens? How long did you live there?
Not long. And then my dad got a job at a college in Rhode Island, and my mother's family was from Rhode Island way back, way back, and. They went and never left. They're still there.
And so you grew up in Rhode Island.
I grew up in Rhode Island, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How did the acting thing hit you? Was it like a high school drama thing?
That's a good question. I mean, I did plays like in third and fourth grade and always enjoyed it. And then I wanted to do the school plays in high school, but I was kind of too nervous to join the group. I thought, I don't.
But with the musical background, wouldn't you think that you could combine the plays and the music and do Sean, what do we call that? The theater
There's a music-based theater out there. I'm not quite sure. I don't think there's a term for
Sean,
it yet.
Sean,
what would be an example of something that you might
do
in musical theater?
5, 6, 7, 8.
You guys are going to have to take that slide whistle away from them. I mean,
so then, Charlie, you finish high school and you say, I'm going to go to New York City and I'm going to try to become a professional guitar player or actor.
Yes, I did have that thought. I was like, well,
which one?
I didn't know. I was like, maybe I want to write music or maybe I want to do
acting. But you knew your future wasn't in Rhode Island. It was probably in Manhattan.
Yeah. Well, first I went to college, Jason.
Where was that? Wait, hang on. What's college?
It's a school after the studio school.
Voluntary additional school? I don't understand it.
Voluntary?
Yeah, that's a part I couldn't compute when I
was
a kid.
What trailer was that in on the Warner lot?
Yeah, one with a flat tire.
Here's what happened. I went to the voluntary additional school, and they had a theater program, but they also had a baseball team. And I didn't make the baseball team, and I thought, I'll go join the theater club. And then I just got hooked. I was like, I liked doing the plays, and it seems to.
Was this school in New York?
This school was in northern Massachusetts called Merrimack College. And you could get in if you had a pulse. Uh-huh, and they let me in. And
my favorite thing in the world is swapping horrible theater stories. Did I tell you guys about the wheelchair story?
Yeah. Well, you got to go. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, so.
Let's just pull the interview over to the side. Hang on. Go, Sean.
No, really quick. This was horrific. I was a sophomore in high school, and I was in charge of changing the scenery, right? The battens that would lift the scenery. So in between, we had like, we were doing one act. So in between each act, we had like, you know, 15, 30 seconds to change the big, huge scenery and pull them up. And I was in charge of all those hydraulics. So the stage manager points to me. She's like, go. And I didn't realize there was a rope hanging on the side that somehow hooked onto the wheelchair that the guy needed in the next scene.
This is an so episode I from raised, a cartoon I saw.
No, I swear to God, this happened. And I raised it, and the hook pulled the wheelchair up. So the curtain goes up, and the wheelchair is just swinging, hanging in midair.
Oh, shit.
And the guy's first line was, you know, something like, I don't know if I'll ever walk again. But he had to, it was awful.
Oh, golly. Back to Smartlist. Hey, Charlie. So you're up there. So you come down out of the junior college, and you come to New York City, and you don't just knock on a door and say, "I'm here. I'd like to be an actor." What do you look in the paper for auditions or an agent, or what was your first step?
Yeah, there? I did all that crap. You know, you get the Village Voice, and you're looking through all those things. I had a really lucky break when I was in college. There was a guy there named John Fussman, and he was like one of those guys who was like 35 and in college. And
just hanging out just outside the school grounds.
Basically.
Looking through the fence. Yeah.
Yeah. And he had tipped me off to a place called the Williamstown Theater Festival.
Sure.
And I went there to sort of, you know, empty garbage cans and maybe say one line in a play and just intern. And they had like a program where you could audition and be part of a non-equity group. And after my first summer there, I was still in college. The next year I auditioned and I got to be part of that group. And
a bunch of agents go up there, right?
That's a good showcase. Yeah. After my third year there, I got an agent. But
Sean, did you ever do that? I'd love to do Williamstown. Did you ever do that?
I would love to. No, but I would love to. But, you know, Charlie, I was going to ask you, like there's when we were all young, all four of us and other people like us that are actors, there was a definite path to what you wanted, right? You got your headshots, and then you had your resume on the back, and then you would submit them to agents, and then agents would. But now it seems so different. Do you have friends? Like, does your sister have friends and be like, "Hey, Charlie, can you help my friend out? They want to get into the biz and they need advice." I mean, do you ever get people coming to you, and what would that advice be now for kids rather than when we were growing up?
Weirdly, I don't get too much of that. I don't know if I don't give off a vibe of that I'll help, or I'm not sure why, but...
Yeah.
Do you feel... No, but let me rephrase that. Do you feel shitty about yourself that nobody wants acting tips from you?
Or career advice.
I had that, Sean, you know, when I was a kid, this is a true story, when I was living in New York, and I was... I didn't know anybody in New York, and somehow my mom knew through somebody from like Winnipeg, knew the actor Len Carreyrou. Do you know that guy? Do you
remember
Len Carreyrou? And so somehow she's like, "You should call him." And I was like, "Okay." So I called him, poor guy, because now I sort of 30 years later, I get that flip, which is like, he's like, "Hey, what can I do for you?" I'm like, "Well, I'm just in New York and I'm going to theater school." And like, okay.
I'm ready to be successful.
Yeah. So, and like, I get now that position. I even felt it at the time where he's like, "I don't know what you want me to do for you, buddy, but, you know, I'm worried about my own day to day over
right.
here."
Right.
And so you do get those calls sometimes from friends of friends, and they go, "Hey, our kid is 18 and he's moving to New York, and can you call him and give him some advice?" And there's really nothing you can say to anybody.
I actually like it. I actually don't mind it. Yeah. It's all about timing, but yeah, I actually
what
like,
do you tell people, you know, because getting an agent, like you do have to get into kind of a showcase situation.
It's just really tough for everybody.
I think you have to create your own path. You know, gone are the days of relying and waiting on phone calls and agents and all that to do it for you. You have to pick up a camera. You have to write the thing, direct the thing, act the thing, put it on YouTube, all that kind of stuff. And Instagram. And so that's how, because every Instagram star wants to be an actor, and every actor wants to be like have the most.
Well,
followers.
Charlie, you guys were kind of like the first people to really do that in a way that has been not just successful but also had longevity. You guys created your own stuff. That was not the norm before you guys did that.
No, that's true. Yeah, although, you know, in some ways, doesn't everybody do that? Like somebody,
I guess the
like,
Lonely Island guys did that too.
Yeah, like
well, but they were already part of an infrastructure there at Saturday Night Live.
No,
right?
No. Before no. Those guys made videos and stuff when they did.
This is
they
Andy Samberg,
Andy and Akiva and Yoram did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they made some videos at Lonely Island. Then they made a pilot called Awesome Town that Phil Lord and Chris Miller produced. Have you ever seen that? It's really rad. But they did the same thing, which was, but again, that was around the same time that Sonny started. It was back in that.
I think what was unique about what we did is we did it for television, where, right. You know, like you, there was a lot of that in independent film. If you're the Coen brothers, you know, you raise money, you do Blood Simple, and then you go do Raising Arizona, whatever it is. And I guess we just took that model to television and we said, well, we'll do the first one real cheap and down and dirty. And then hopefully someone gives us money to do this more legitimately. But going back to your question before, I often do promote Williamstown, which for me was like a showcase situation. Or if you're really serious about acting, go to grad school, which I wish I'd done. But because that place was not only boot camp for acting, it was boot camp for you better show up and shine. Because in that group, in that non-equity group, it was myself and Catherine Hahn and Sterling Brown.
Wow.
And I mean, the competition was so fierce. And Jimmy Simpson, and these people were going to outshine you. They weren't trying to outshine you, but they were going to do their work and they were going to be, you know, they were going to come to rehearsal, not set, and just blow it out of the water. So you had to learn how to. I feel like my first summer there, I did well in some plays, and I thought the next year, I thought everyone would be like, well, he's the man, let's give him everything. And it wasn't that way. You know, it was a rude awakening of like, well, you did that, what are you going to do now? So that was such a good boot camp in terms of like, do your work, work hard, make sure you're not wasting anybody's time.
It's funny you say that. I remember having one of my acting teachers years ago, he was saying like, look, all the process you do, all the work you do, whatever, when you show up on set, no, they don't give a shit. You got to deliver in the moment and that's it. And that was the only sort of piece of advice that I've ever given young people, which is just like, you got to be on top of your shit. You got to know your shit. Like you said, you got to be ready to deliver in the moment because that's what matters.
Yeah. It's a bit exhausting, right? You do like you put all this work into this, years go by, you develop whatever fame, success, and you kind of think, okay, well, now I can coast, but I the phone doesn't really ring. Maybe it does for DiCaprio, but for nobody else, you got to put something together and you have to, and then when you are in it, you can't stink, right? You got to shine.
Your son, is he too young to know that he wants to do what dad does?
Or mom does, too. Both of you guys are actors.
Yeah,
Mary Elizabeth has this great part in Paul Thomas Anderson's film right now.
Oh, she's great in it. Yeah. And that movie's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
That guy.
Paul Thomas Anderson?
Yeah, talk about a guy.
I think things are going to work out for him, I think.
He's going to make it.
Great
he
debut.
He's going to make it.
Paul Thomas Anderson is the greatest director of all time. And go. And Ignite.
Right.
How about he's my favorite, for sure.
I know, me too.
He's the greatest.
Oh, I got to go see a screening of that movie at his house, which...
No way.
You know, he has these... Maybe he doesn't want... But he has, like, these film projectors. He's got, like, this barn that he's converted into, like, a screening room.
And for Tracy, the name of the movie is...
Licorice Pizza.
Pizza.
Which is the name of a record store that was all over the valley when I was growing up. So he's got this cool...
Oh, that's why you're crying. and your wife, M.E., Mary Elizabeth Ellis, whom I know, she and I did a pilot together years ago, as you know.
Yes.
And she's a tremendously talented actor, and she's in Paul Thomas Anderson's movie Licorice Pizza. So you went to a screening at his
house.
Screening barn.
Yeah, Maya. Just to kind of... to hang out with Maya Rudolph. So
and
that
Maya,
was a...
Who's our pal. Yeah,
I just didn't want to blow it for my wife. I'm like, just keep cool, man, and don't get drunk and don't act dumb.
Did you stand up with a bunch of notes at the end of it?
I had a couple notes, but he wasn't listening, you know? That's the problem with these artists.
Yeah, we were locked.
Pop Charlie Day in for a couple scenes. That's really going to make this movie pop.
We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Johnny Knoxville.
And I'm Elna Baker, and we have a new podcast. It's called Pretty Sure I Can Fly.
Yep, we've teamed up with my friends and bar mates from Smartless to create a podcast where we talk to folks who have more balls in a bowling alley.
People who accomplished something extraordinary despite people telling them that it couldn't or shouldn't be done.
You'll hear stories about the Air Force doctor who buckled into a 600-mile-per-hour rocket sled and became the fastest man on the planet.
And a man who wrestles alligators and sharks for fun.
Do not do this.
You'll hear about a foul-mouthed moonshiner.
Got a 2-inch dick and a 6-inch tongue and knows how to use both of them.
And an even more foul-mouthed female stunt pilot. We got bull riders.
Balloonists.
Bobsledders.
And big wave surfers. People who lay their balls on an anvil and hand the other fella the hammer.
Okay. I bet you've actually done that, Johnny.
Maybe for sweeps. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Get to the chopper. I'll be back. Listen, I gotta tell you, of all guests we've had on SmartList, I don't know if we've had a bigger icon on our podcast than Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, what a treat it was talking to that guy. Arnold is an inspiration, from having reached the heights of bodybuilding to then conquer Hollywood and become a global movie star. Oh, and for his third act, he oversaw the world's fifth largest economy as governor of California. The man has truly done it all. In our interview, he shares the secret of how he's able to accomplish what he puts his mind to, what motivates him to keep working out all these years, and the extreme generosity that he received after arriving in America. You gotta listen to this episode to hear what it's like to be Chris Pratt's father-in-law and how Arnold's first comedy, Twins, has made him more money than any other film he's done. Hint, he's also a great businessman. Give it a listen if you haven't. Bye. Seps.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen to Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
All right, back to the show.
Now, listen, Charlie, for your new podcast, which is, I think is becoming really popular, isn't it?
Yes,
do you
it
guys
is.
Have guests on, or is it just you three chatting?
Right now, it's just us chatting. I mean, that kind of caught us off guard, you know. This was my gripe with McElhenney. About 2 years ago, I was like, we should do a Sunny podcast. We should just talk about the show. The fans will probably want to hear that. And he's like, everybody's doing podcasts. You know, like, we're too late. Then this year he shows up. He goes, you know what we should do? A Sunny podcast.
Oh, boy.
I'm like, this motherfucker. I'm like,
yeah, I know this guy.
But here's the difference. And here's why I've benefited so greatly from a partnership with Rob. When I said it, it was just gobbledygook talk. Mm-hmm. And when he said it, he already had the mics and the producer lined up and ready to go.
He's an action.
He's an action guy. So it's been good for me to unite with an action guy.
Being on that side of it, do you, and we all know this as actors, promoting and marketing and all that stuff, having to do talk shows and whatever, podcasts or whatever the thing is, do you have a preference of being a guest or a host?
Well, I guess we're not really hosting anyone, so I don't know.
You're kind of hosting a podcast, but yeah.
We're really just kind of shooting the shit.
Okay.
Well, people seem to want to listen to it.
But I think that one of the things, we're all talking about the same thing. We obviously have, there are a lot of similarities, which is, you talk about we create our own weather, we do our own thing, and we do a lot of different things. You're doing the podcast, you do your show, you've got this new movie on Amazon, which was a sexy segue.
That was a good segue, yeah. So I did a rom-com, finally.
So you did a rom-com, yeah.
Saw me as Rom.
So talk a little bit about, because I want to get into, you do a lot of different stuff, and you've got a lot of different gears, which is commendable, and you're obviously, you know, you're a talented guy. So you go and you do a rom-com. What was were you just like, yeah, fuck it, I could do a rom-com.
I was always dying to do a rom-com because I actually really enjoy them. And I sort of wanted to have my, Tom Hanks moment or Billy Crystal or whatever. And
was there a sex scene?
No, there's, you know.
Is there a kiss?
Hey, cool it.
Hey, take it easy, man. Know.
What are you imagining? Jason, what are you imagining? Talk to what you're imagining.
Well, because some people can go their whole careers or a large portion of it without ever doing a sex scene. And then all of a sudden, the day shows up and it's like, oh my God, I've been in this business 30 years and I've never had to like fake lovemaking. Did you have to do that?
No, that's a good question. No, I've...
Have you ever had to do that?
Yeah, I have a very graphic one on It's Always Sunny where we did a ski episode and we were making sort of fun of like 80s ski movies and over-the-top sex scenes. So, you know...
How'd that go?
How'd it go?
It was fine, you know.
You don't have to ask him in a whisper, Will.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, okay. Walk us through it.
Yeah, talk slow.
I mean, you know, it's always the case with me with the sex scenes. I always feel bad for the other person, you know, where I'm like, mm-hmm. Hey, look, I'm sorry. It's just me and this, you know, I'm pasty. And
Sean, you had to do one?
Yeah, there's this cult show, which is fantastic, called Campus Ladies. Huh. With Carrie Aisley and sure. Kristen Sussin and okay. Will sure. Forte was on it and a bunch sure. of funny people were on it. And Jonah Hill, that was Jonah Hill's first show. Uh-huh. And and I played somebody who wasn't the brightest, who always wore a backpack.
How'd you get into that character?
Wow.
So I just put a backpack on and then I had to wear no clothes except the backpack and have sex with and literally have intercourse with Kristen Sussin.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
How did that
Jason?
Go?
Jason?
Fine.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. Sean, finish
that
up.
That was it.
That was it. And Jason, what about your sex stuff?
I've got a loose connection. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
Is that what you said in the sex scene? I'm not following.
My wire keeps coming out.
And can you hear me?
Yeah.
And is it in? I guess that's the big.
Hey, Charlie.
Wait, yeah. You didn't answer, Jason, if you've done a sex scene.
I have, and I don't like them. And
they're not good.
It's just, you know, all the cliches are true. You know, you have there's a very difficult line one has to ride, which is, you know, if you're into it and you're being passionate convincingly, things start to move, guys. And if they don't move, there's that classic saying that one of the actors said, I apologize if I get aroused and I apologize if I don't get aroused or something like that. Yeah. It's a concern.
Well, Bateman, we did this movie called Horrible Bosses. It was a massive global hit, Will. And
well, you had a little sex scene with Aniston, right?
That was the first thing.
Mounted you.
Yeah, that was the first thing we shot.
Oh wow!
Wow!
Oh,
boy.
And that planning. Was basically my second time meeting her. I met her at the read through. It was like, okay, well, now take all your clothes off, and we'll take these provocative photos. But I only found it humiliating, you know, yeah. because I was like, oh man, I should like go to the gym or like.
You
know,
sure.
I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm really pasty and doughy over here. And, you know, you're probably not used to an image like this in your sexual scenarios.
I had to do a scene in Brother Solomon with Forte where he comes to, where we make up at the end of the movie and I'm in the shower. Mm-mm. And I come out. So I've just got the little sock on mm-hmm. and then nothing else. And then I got to turn and he and I have to hug. Well, I'm basically...
Now, let's, for Tracy, let's explain what the sock is. Go ahead, Will.
it's basically that. Like, it's a sock that you put over your, it's a thing you put over your junk. All your meats and cheeses get covered.
Yeah, it's like it's a little coin purse that's got a couple of pieces of fishing wire on both sides that go around you in a as a thong.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's a nude coin purse. It's a nude colored, and it's made out of like pantyhose and with fishing string on it. So you can imagine it's not comfortable.
It's not flattering.
It's not a good looking thing, and it's difficult at times to fill out. Will? Yeah.
And it's that was not an issue. It was more of an issue that it was kind of the, like you said, like I'm sorry if I get it aroused, and I'm sorry if I don't. And I just thought, boy, this could go either way with Forte. I have no idea.
Which way did it go?
I don't want to say it, but I
we
love the guy.
We all have to watch a movie.
Let me just say this: I love the guy, and you can tell.
Well, you've said plenty.
Will, you wear that to the beach sometimes.
So, Charlie, so you're doing this romantic comedy. You decide you want to do it. What is the movie?
Well, the movie's called I Want You Back, and it's with Jenny Slate and myself.
Oh, mega talent.
She's pretty good. She's pretty good. Our producing buddy, John Ricard, produced this movie.
Another mega talent.
Yeah, and we've worked together on Horrible Bosses and Fist Fight. And I was talking to John, and I was saying, you know, we should find something to do. And he said, I got these two scripts, and you should look at them. And he said, but one's a rom-com, so you probably don't want to do that. I said, why would I not want to do that? Send me the rom-com.
Nasty, nasty thing to say.
Nasty thing to say. And I loved it. We put it together. It's a really sweet and funny movie. By the way, I did have to take my shirt off in it. And I had this sort of conundrum where the character doesn't work out, and then he starts working out in the story. And I thought, well, which body do I go with? Do I go with the guy who looks like he's not been working out, or the guy that looks like he has been working out?
And
I went with the guy who has not been working out.
Did you look at the shooting schedule to sort of plan out what kind of shape you'd be in? Because I do that. I mean, for Tracy, these projects, they take at least 6 weeks to shoot, sometimes 12 or more. And if you know you got a topless scene on, as Will likes to call it, you know, you want to make sure that you're not having a whole lot of soy sauce a few days out, you know?
No, right. I let that go. I was like, no, that's not what the audience wants from me. They don't want me to pop that shirt off and have rippling abs. They'll be disturbed if they see it.
There's nothing funny about a six pack.
There's nothing funny about it. And this is a comedy.
So, Charlie, any recent vacays, as we call it in the biz? Any vacays with the fam?
I went to Hawaii.
Okay.
I knew that.
Oh, yeah.
I saw
you
that
sent
pic.
Us a shot of that beautiful.
You sent that pic in our little chain.
Oh, yeah. I did. Yeah. I did. That's right.
So you went to Hawaii. Did you go by yourself, or did you bring your wife and child?
No, of course I brought my wife and child. And I played a bunch of golf, and we hung out and relaxed and went to the beach. And I reset. It was good. I was coming right off a bunch of things, and it was nice to take a break.
Charlie, 2022, what are you most excited about?
Oh man, I don't know. I'm always pretty just excited to be doing this. I mean, I don't know. I'm still grateful
more
to be doing
same.
It. Yeah. I've been polishing up a movie for a good 4 years that I directed that Bateman was kind enough to be in.
Yeah. When do we get to see that, Charlie?
Any minute. I'm right around the corner. But I was going to sell it. I was in the process of selling it to a studio, and I was having some conversations with a very talented man, Mr. Guillermo del Toro. And I had a change of heart, and I took the movie and I reshot about 20% of it.
Am I still in it?
You're still in it. You made the cut. That's been a maddening, long experience, but I'm really happy with the movie. So hopefully I'll get it out to the world this year. I'm excited about that. I'm excited about this rom-com. I'm excited about maybe getting some golf in with the boys here, you know?
Yeah. That's good.
And Horrible Bosses 3, I think we can announce.
Well, now why didn't we do it, you know?
Well, because...
no one
you
wanted
know,
it?
Yeah, because Horrible Bosses 2 just basically, you know, cratered.
Did it shit the bed?
By today's standards, it's a huge hit.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. It didn't do as well as
the
first.
Oh, you mean by pandemic standards?
Yeah, that's right.
by the standards of everybody staying home and not going into theaters, it did
well, I would like the third one because I really, really like to collect those sets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Things do happen in three. Maybe we just make it for a price, you know? But it did turn out people just didn't give a shit about a second one. So they're really not going to want a third.
It's not really a story that needed a
Hear
sequel.
Hear me out. No. Horrible Bosses 3, but there are two new Sean, right? Two new guys who look, they're kind of.
They just go, my boss is terrible.
Hey, my boss is bad too. Yeah.
Are you a boss or you're an employee?
Exactly.
But the catchphrase is, my boss is bad three.
Yeah. Same here. You know?
I get it, Sean. I get it.
So, Charlie, listen, you're such a talent.
You're
such
divine.
A good guy.
You're such a good guy.
You're a theater major. You're a musician. Golfer.
Great marriage. Charming little kid.
Your new movie, I Want You Back. Your rom-com is out.
I can't wait to see it.
And it's on Amazon now.
It's really good. I actually love this movie a lot.
Charlie,
I love you.
Charlie, thank you for being here.
We see you on the golf course probably in the next few days.
You're teeing off in about, what, 10 minutes?
Yeah, this is already 6 minutes into my heart out. Yeah.
He's got a heart out.
That shows how much he loves you. He never does this if he's got a heart out for golf,
I appreciate the 6 minutes over. That's good.
And you know how persnickety Jason is about everything.
My range time. I need my range time.
Yeah. Well, we can come back. I can come back. We'll finish this off at probably.
And next time you're on the podcast, we'll talk about the time when we were coming down 18 and the guy hadn't charged Jason's Tesla.
But
we'll save that.
And I had a 2-hour drive ahead of me.
Yeah, yeah.
It didn't end well.
You made him give him his
my 20 back.
Yeah, 20 back. Back. Yeah.
And then we never.
Jason, I gave him 20 just because I felt bad. He got yelled at so much.
Jason, you don't know this, but Charlie and I both tipped the guy after you took the tip.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Yeah.
Well, we felt bad. Well, we didn't want them to write a story fucking Jason.
You
were his hero.
He fucked me good. At least $20. I should have taken more out of his pocket. Son of a bitch.
I will say, to your credit, you did preemptively tip the guy and say, hey, do you mind taking care of this? He said, great. And then he didn't do it.
Right. So it's like, well, I'm going to pay you for the valet parking, but the extra juice for doing me a solid, which you didn't do.
Yeah.
That then means that you no longer need the money for that.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. If you had shot like even par that day, like your best round ever,
Do you think you would have given him a ride wherever he wanted to go and all the money in my pocket.
And that is Jason Bateman. Guys, we'll be right back with an all new episode of Smartless. He loves his golf. He loves his golf.
Charlie, enjoy the rest of your day.
Great to see your faces, fellas. Sean, let's hang out sometime.
I'm right here just for you.
Not worth it, Charlie.
No?
No.
It's got to be better. Bring the slide whistle.
Next 2 weeks, text us. Let's get out.
Okay. I'm busy, but, we'll see.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
He's about to slam the laptop. He's gonna do the good out.
Why? Because I'll tell you why I wasn't gonna do it. Because Sean Penn did it. And then I remember I was listening to that. I was like, wow, Sean Penn did it.
That's the way.
I think I've done it ever since then. I was like, Sean Penn just slams it down.
Slam it down.
Yeah. That's how you do it.
So I'm gonna slam it down. Bye.
Bye. Oh, look, he really did.
That Charlie Day is always a breath of fresh air, isn't it? Every time you see him, you feel better.
He's like we could change his middle name to Sonny, right? So just Charlie Sunny Day.
Yeah.
Always a sunny day.
Yeah.
And Charlie.
So, Sean, you don't know Charlie. You've never met him personally.
I never met him. I did that one voiceover Monsters University with him. But, of course, when you do animated films, you don't really see the other actor because you're doing it alone.
What?
Yeah. So I never really met him before, but I'm a huge fan. And I don't know if you've seen Monsters University, but he steals the movie.
He's hilarious. Yeah, of course. First of all, if you're a fan of comedy or you're a fan of animation or you've got kids, you've seen Monsters University. It's a great movie, and he is great in it. And you are, no, it's a great movie. He is such a. I met him the first time was through his wife, through Emmy, Mary Elizabeth Ellis, who's such a talent and so cool. And he's a super nice guy, super real. And he joked about being down to earth. He legitimately is. And then he's incredibly talented.
Yeah, I love him.
And prolific writer and just everything. And he's so funny. He's so naturally funny.
You guys both have very unique voices.
Yeah. He's got a very unique voice. I don't know if I would consider myself to, but he does.
Wait, nobody ever bites my theater stories.
Number one. So why don't we save it for because a podcast no one wants to listen to?
Okay.
What's funny is that you don't take from that, like, maybe I should stop asking that.
I'm telling you.
Your takeaway is nobody bites
on telling you, somebody's going to come with a really funny theater story. I think they're always so funny.
I like that usually your question about funny theater stories ends up with you telling a funny theater story.
I know. It's just, it's a self-setup.
Jason, you missed Sean the other day. Robert and I kept pimping him out to tell funny stories for everybody at dinner.
Funny theater stories.
Funny theater story. And he kept getting up and telling these hilarious, they were legitimately hilarious. And he got so worked up, he had to go to the hospital.
I did.
That's a true story. So all of a sudden, Jen comes and goes, Sean just went to the hospital. I'm like, what?
You know, next time I bring up a theater story, maybe someone will bite.
Oh, bite. Yes, got bite. It. Got bite. It. Yeah, no, that works. That qualifies. Love you guys. Bye.
Love you, bite.
Smart.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Rob Armjarv, Bennett Barbaco, and Michael Grant Terry.
Smart. Less.
If you like Smartless, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Back in the 90s, Pepsi and Coca-Cola were in a heated race to try and win loyal customers by any means necessary. But when Pepsi launched an ambitious promotion that encouraged people to buy Pepsi and redeem points for prizes, they overlooked their own fine print in a major way. I'm Misha Brown, and I'm the host of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop. Every week, guests join me to chronicle one of the biggest pop culture fails of all time. Like, who at Pepsi thought it would be a good idea to advertise that people could earn enough points to redeem a military jet as a prize? They never imagined somebody might actually try to snag it. But a 23-year-old did, and suddenly, Pepsi owed him a jet. Follow The Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.